Today on the Rising Coaches Podcast.
When I got named interim head coach when I was 29, I was the first Indian head coach in NCAA history. When I got named head coach at Oklahoma City, I was the first NAI head coach in of Indian descent as well. And, you know, that's not something you won't see that on my resume. You won't see me tweet about that stuff. That's not a big deal to me. What I like is that maybe other people can see it, and it won't stop them from trying to do it.
Hello, and welcome to the Rising Coaches Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Bender, and today's episode is brought to you in part by one of our favorite sponsors, Connor Sports. Connor Sports is a world leader in sports surfaces, the official floor of the Final Four and the Olympics. They do everything from floors on the NBA level all the way to rec centers at your local rec. ConnorSports.com. Visit them today to find out more and get yourself a new floor. Also, if you're not already a member of or interested in joining the largest coaching tree in basketball, visit risingcoaches.com to sign up today. You'll build genuine relationships with other coaches, have access to amazing content, and allow you to develop your craft, expand your network, and see job opportunities on our member site that don't get posted anywhere else. More information, visit risingcoaches.com. All right, today's guest, Vinay Patel, head coach at Northwestern Oklahoma State. Coach, you just joined Rising Coaches. Congratulations. Welcome aboard. Thanks
for joining us today. Thanks for having me on. Excited to join.
That's awesome. Well, give us a little bit about your background here. Obviously, you're a Division II head coach. You've done well there. You're a heck of a recruiter, as I know. But walk us through your journey. How'd you get to where you are now?
Yeah, you know, that's always a favorite story for me, how I broke in. I was just going to school at Texas Tech as a student. I graduated high school in 2002 and I love Texas Tech. I mean, I love my alma mater. I'm a huge Texas Tech football fan, everything. And I go there for 3 years. I'm not a part of any athletic department, basketball program, anything. I'm just a student. In my senior year, I'm in class with a football player, and he's a friend of mine. And, we're getting ready to graduate. And I said, hey, what are you going to do? And he said, well, I'm going to GA with the football team. And I said, well, what's a GA? And he said, well, it's a graduate assistant. He's walking me through what a GA is. And I kind of said, well, I want a GA, because I was going to school to be a coach anyways. And I didn't know what a GA was. He kind of explained it. So, from there, I hand wrote letters. I sent emails over 300 plus schools across the country, all levels. I mean, D1, D2, D3, NAIs, everywhere. I get several responses back, and obviously most of them are no's, because I haven't done anything in basketball. I wasn't even a manager. So I get an email back from Rick Cooper at West Texas A&M, and he wants to meet. So we set up a day and time, and I drive down to Canyon. It's a short 2-hour drive. Got my shirt and tie on. I walk into the offices. I look at the assistant, look at the GA in there. Said, hey, I'm here to see Coach Cooper. And they said, well, he's not here today. And I was kind of like, what? And said, yeah, he's not here today. So I leave. I'm a little bit frustrated. So I'm driving back to Lubbock, and I don't get to meet with Coach Cooper. And about halfway back, I get a call from him. He's apologizing and said, hey, I'll come up there to interview and see you. And I said, no, just give me another day, and I'll come back down. So I drive back down a few days later and meet with him. And Coach was one of the most genuine people I've ever met. So I felt really good about it. And I for the first however long, he's convincing me to not do it. And, just like, you need to go to med school. You need to go to business school. You need to get your MBA. And he's just like, are you sure you want to coach? And he's like, cause you got to really want to do it if you want to do it. And so I said, yeah. So he lets me be a volunteer grad assistant. And, to this day, I tell people that the only reason he let me do it is cause he forgot to show up the first day. And so, so he gave me a chance. So I'm 21 years old. I graduated from Tech in 3 years. I'm starting a master's, and I'm a volunteer GA. And, that day on, I'm on the steps of the offices at 7:15 in the morning. I'm the first one there every day. I don't have a key to the office, anything. And I'm there till someone gets there to let me in the offices every day. And I had just made my mind up that I was going to be able to be a college coach. And so I worked my tail off as hard as I could. Literally the first year, I was basically a glorified manager. And I didn't mind that at all. If my job was to do laundry, I was going to be the best at doing it. If my job was going to make copies of this and you know, I tell GAs and managers this now because I think the job's gotten a little bit easier than what it was. I remember sitting in front of a fax machine for hours, faxing junior college recruits good luck today, and signing it and saying, you know, if it was your team, Southwest Mississippi playing Kahoma or something, and, you know, I'd be sending your player, hey, good luck versus Kahoma today, or whatever it might be. And I would sit for like 4 hours in front of a fax machine, sending it to all our recruits and then writing letters and licking envelopes and you name it. I did that the whole first year. Second year, I get a little bit more responsibility, doing some other things. I finish, I'm 22. I don't know what the heck I'm going to do. I get a chance to go interview at Texas A&M Kingsville, a Division II school in our conference, to be an assistant. So I go down there, drive 15 hours for an interview. Coach Pete Peterson offers me the job, and WT flips back around and says, hey, we'll create a position to keep you there. We'll match salary. We'll do everything if you stay here. And I said, okay. I mean, I was going to stay with Coach Cooper because he'd been so great to me for 2 years. So for the next 3 years, I coach girls and guys for 3 years as the second assistant. So I'm in every practice back-to-back, girls practice, then guys practice. I'm recruiting for both. I'm doing scouts for both. It was a crazy 3 years. And I'm telling you, I was in the gym for a long time. And I'm on the road all the time for recruiting. And you know, by the third year, I was a little bit wore out. And I kind of went to both coaches and said, you know, I think it's time that I find something else to do or somewhere else to do it. And I get offered the assistant job at Northeastern Oklahoma State. And with Coach Larry Gibson, and I jump in the car and I accept the job. And so I had to come up there to do some HR stuff and officially accept it through the process. And I'm driving up there. I'm halfway to Tahlequah. It's about 7 hours from Canyon. I'm 3.5 hours into my drive. And Coach Cooper calls me and basically convinces me to stay. And he's going to bump me up to the top assistant spot if I turn my car around. And so I turn my car around. And so I had to fill my first recruiting class that year. We had to bring about 4 or 5 guys, and our whole staff works our tail off, signed some guys. And I think that year we start out 15-0. And at the time it was the second best start in school history with that first class. So I do that. And you know, I was really fortunate because I'm moving up in the profession, but I'm not having to move. And so, you know, I'm staying in the same place. So, you know, I start year 6, I start year 7. I think by year 7, I'm associate head coach now. And year 8, you know, I'm still there. Well, by year 9, you know, my head coach is kind of nearing the end of his career. And I think we could all kind of sense it coming. And midway through the year, he announces his retirement. So I take over as the interim head coach halfway through the season. And so we finished that season out. You know, I didn't get the job. And that was really hard on me after spending almost 10 years at one place. You know, I met my wife there. She played there. She GA'd there. And I had a lot of friends there from being there that long. And I was very fortunate. I met a lot of friends in the business and had a lot of opportunities to go to different places when I left WT. But I went and I had a lot of fun the next year. I go down to Roger State University with Justin Barkley, who's a very good friend of mine. They were going through the transition from NAI to D2. And he asked me to join his staff. I'll go down there and interview. Thought it was going to be a lot of fun. So I got married in between that. And my wife and I, you know, newlyweds, go to Claremore, Oklahoma. You know, I get there and Coach Barkley and I, we got to fill our recruiting class. And it's during the transition. And you know, that was really challenging because we can't compete for postseason. And so at that time, I don't know if I'd ever heard so many no's in my life when we were recruiting, because we were upfront and honest with every single recruit. You know, we said, hey, you know, it's going to be a great experience. We're going to take care of you. It's a winning program, but you can't compete for anything. You can't compete for a championship. And so, you know, we fill that class. We end up signing 2 Division I transfers. We get a junior college kid that was sitting out. He ends up being player of the year in the league. And we end up finishing 2nd place in the league that year. So a lot of fun with Justin that year. I start the second year. We have another great recruiting class. And I'm about 30, 31 that time, because I'm really young. Obviously, I started at 21. I'm driving to Dallas with Tyler Wayman, our second assistant. And we're heading down the road to Mullins and Mitchell's event in October. to see a bunch of junior college teams play. And athletic director from Oklahoma City, Jim Abbott, calls me out of the blue. I don't even know anything about it. And he says, hey, we lost our coach at Oklahoma City late. He took a Division I job. Would you have any interest in being our head coach? And I'm ecstatic, you know, because I want to be a head coach. And so I tell him, you know, yeah. And he wants to interview me. And I said, well, I can't come. And he goes, why not? And I said, well, the school paid for me to do this recruiting trip. And I feel like I owe it to them to do what I said I'm going to do. So if you want to interview, we can do it when I get back. And the awesome thing was my anniversary gift. My wife bought me tickets to the Counting Crows concert in Oklahoma City, which was that Sunday. So we were already in the city anyways for that weekend. So I interviewed with Jim Abbott. And on October 15th of that year, I get hired as the head coach at Oklahoma City University. I walk into a team that was picked one of the lowest in school history at the time, preseason. I take the job on the 15th at 4 o'clock. At 4:05, I have my first practice. Because in NAI, you know, practices start about October 1st. So I don't know a guy on the roster. And I walk into practice. There was about 4 days we were waiting for my background check to clear. So I'm memorizing their pitcher and their names on their roster. And I'm trying to find clips on Synergy. And I get to that practice and, you know, I'm calling guys the wrong name. I mean, you know, I call a guy Jonathan and he gets mad and says, it's John, you know, and they're calling a kid Casa. And I'm scratching my head because I don't remember a guy named Casa on the team. And his name was Caleb House. And so they called him Casa. And so, you know, that team, we weren't very talented, but they were really tough. And so we were picked, you know, next to last or third to last in the league. And we finished second in the league. Tied for second, and we make the national tournament. The next year, we're up to number two in the country. The third year, we win the league, and we're in the Sweet 16. Fourth year, we win the Sweet 16. And then my wife and I have our first child. She was the women's assistant at Oklahoma City University. She won a national championship, and she was national runner-up there as an assistant. Really, you should be doing this on her, not me. She's probably the more qualified one. But we had our son, and really, we're in the Sweet 16, my fourth year at Oklahoma City. We lose in the Sweet 16. We come home, have our son the next day. And so I was there just in time. You know, she was 9 months pregnant, and her team was in the national championship game. And she's sending scouts up to the coach from home. She's doing all the scouts and watching all the and so it's a basketball family. I could tell you that. But, you know, that day kind of changed my life when our son came. And I wanted to spend time with him. And I was working really hard at Oklahoma City. You know, again, I've always taken a blue-collar approach. I'm there at 7:15 in the morning. We do a class sign-in sheet with all our kids. So every morning, if a kid has 8 a.m. class, we make them sign our door by 7:45, and it's my door. You know, I want it to be the head coach's door. I want them to see my face every single day. If they have an issue, if they need anything, they've got me every day. So I'm there early every day, and I'm commuting from 20 minutes away. And our practice slot was the late slot at Oklahoma City. So I'm at home at 7 or 8 at night every night. And having a newborn, I wanted to be able to spend some time with them. And this job opened up, and, you know, Brad Franz is the athletic director. And used to work for Jerry Mullen. So I got to know Brad through recruiting and through the recruiting service. Brad coached at Otero. He coached here. You know, he's a phenomenal recruiter. And, you know, I just called him because somebody texted me that the job had just opened and that the coach had left. And so I just take a shot in the dark and call Brad. Well, he answers the phone. I couldn't believe it because, you know, how jobs work when they open. I mean, people's phones are blowing up. And Brad goes, Coach, I've missed about I don't know how many calls. I'm hoping to God you're calling me about this job. And I said, well, yeah, coach, that's why I'm calling you. And so I said, tell me about Northwestern. So they asked me to come down and interview. And, you know, I was very fortunate. They offered me the job. And my wife and I moved down here for my son and really to get back to Division II as well. But I live 2 minutes from campus. My son's around our team all the time. I get to spend so much time with him. My wife got out of coaching because of it. She just got hired in July as the compliance officer here at Northwestern. So she's still in athletics, but, you know, my son really changed a lot of things and I wanted to be around him And I still wanted to do what I love doing as well, which is helping young people through basketball and through athletics. And so Northwestern allowed us to do that. And you know, we have a great administration here with Janet Cunningham, our president, and Brad Franz, our AD. And they're so family oriented. I mean, my son's up here all the time. My assistant just had his son a couple of days ago, and he's got two kids now. They're up here all the time. And to me, it's more about that now, you know, and I learned that as I got older. You know, when I was young, I wanted to be a Division I coach. I wanted to be a Division I head coach. And you're seeing everything on TV and everything else. As I got older and as I learned more about Division II and NAI, like, I love the small college level. You know, I think you can make a huge impact on young people's lives while still doing everything Division I coaches do. But you can make your own choices as far as spending time with your family. I think you get a little bit more time at home, get a little bit more time with your kids if you got kids. And that's what's special to me about this level is just the family part of it. So really, that's my journey, you know, and it, I know that was probably long-winded, but it's something I'm very proud of. And, you know, I'm excited to be here, and I'm excited about our team this year.
Awesome. Yeah, there was a lot of good intel in there. Very unique story, like you said. You know, I'll touch on a few things that I thought, you know, notable, especially from a rising coach's perspective. But that GA position, a lot of people don't know anything and everything about it. And you going to a Division II level to be a GA, you may have not known it at the time, but I find it a lot more impactful to get coaching and recruiting experience at that level rather than going to Division I and basically kind of what you were talking about. You're a glorified basketball secretary that does some stuff on the floor and, you know, manager type duties and some new video and different things. It's not just that, but being able to recruit has helped you probably become a better recruiter through that. If you're interested, the Rising Coaches organization put together a GA Academy for anybody that's listening. It's on Coach2, well worth any type of penny that it's worth right there to look at that. And it goes into insights, a lot of different things that kind of go along with the job. You talked a lot about just family and your core value as a human being, being about family and being in a basketball family and such. And your wife is a compliance officer. I find that. So you can't get away with anything, not at home or at work.
No, and I'm not going to put her in that position either. So we make sure we dot our I's and cross our T's.
Yeah, something like
that. On everything.
That's awesome. And I love the fact that, you know, your program centered around the family thing. You know, me having a young daughter and she comes around, she'll come to study hall once a week and the guys will hang out with her. It's just good to have them interact with people and be about that. So I think that's awesome. All right, we'll kind of dive into the next segment of it. So you talked a lot about the Division II level, and you talked about how you've kind of enjoyed that small college life. And, you know, tell me a little bit more about, like, what is it about Division II that you like? And then how has Division II and NAI kind of changed in your time there? So since, you know, the middle of 2000s to, you know, keep it going.
Well, for me, like, you know, I didn't know much about it, obviously, because, you know, growing up as a kid, all you see is Division I basketball on TV. And so, you know, when I got to WT, West Texas A&M, it was just learning, first of all, how good the players are at this level, you know, because I think you look at rosters across the country, there's high school players that are Division I talented that maybe not have got the offer that they wanted. There's junior college kids that's kind of the same thing, or maybe they were missing a core class or something, and that caused them to go Division II. You know, and now with the portal, you get so many Division I transfers as it is. You know, if you looked at my roster today, we got a lot of kids like that. You know, over the course of time, the thing I've enjoyed about Division II, like I've told you, is family. But I think it's you get to be with kids so much every single day. And I ask our kids in the recruiting process, you know, how much did you talk to your coach at the Division I level? And a lot of them will tell me just they're in practice. You know, they don't have the access to it. And it's not the coach's fault, because at that level, they have so many things they got to do. They got speaking engagements. They've got donors. They've got boosters. They got to be around. And, you know, I always tell them it's not going to be like that with me. You know, and that's the family part that we're talking about. I'm going to spend a lot of time with these guys. I talked about the class sign-in sheet. You know, that's important to me, is to see our kids every day and go, not only, hey, good job, if there's something, you know, good that we need to tell them, but hey, how can we help every day? You know, what do you need? How's home? How's your mom doing at home? How's your brother doing? Whatever it might be, but it gets us to get to know them better. It gets them to trust us a little bit more. I feel like it gets us, when they have issues, to be open to come to us a little bit more. I feel like, and not just whoever recruited them. You know, I think at Division I, sometimes an assistant recruits a kid, and that kid is that assistant's kid, and it's not the staff's kid. And kind of what I've learned at Division II is, like, everyone on our team is, you know, I told my assistant this from the day I took this job. We recruit everyone together. We're going to coach everyone together. We're going to teach everyone together. It's not going to be it's my kid or his kid and things like that. And I think that really sticks out at D2, you know, is the fact that, you know, some of that family orientation that you're talking about, but just access to help guys a little bit more intimately as far as in their lives, being with them more. Now, you know, Division I has way more resources to do some things that we can't do. And I get all that stuff. But I think it's important for me as a head coach to really be in their lives and really be able to communicate with them when they need someone to lean on. You know, and in our profession, you know, we get guys from all over the country. So when a guy signs up to come to Alva, Oklahoma from New York or from California, I got to be there for him when he needs someone, because who else does he have this far away from home? You know, and so I've learned through my process of Division II how important that role is inside of coaching. You know, it's not just, I think a lot of people think it's just recruiting, it's just coaching, it's just the things you see on TV. But there's so much more to it. And I think small college, NAI, JUCO, D2, you know, you got a smaller staff, so you got to do more, you know, and it's more on your shoulders. And I think that's the neat thing about it as well. Like you were talking about with the GAs get a recruit, they get a coach on the floor, they get to be around the guys every single day at Division II. That hasn't changed. You know, the some of the duties, I remember doing film exchange when it was VHS tapes. I literally would get in a car and drive to swap VHS tapes with Damon Francis. I'll never forget. He's one of my closest friends. He's not in coaching anymore. But he used to be at Southwestern Oklahoma. I was at West Texas A&M. We'd meet halfway and swap VHS tapes. I remember spending a Thanksgiving at the bus station, because we're getting ready to play a classic on Thanksgiving Classic. And we don't have tape on Western State Colorado, who we're playing. And they were exhibitioning Air Force. And 2 days before Thanksgiving. Well, FedEx doesn't run during Thanksgiving. So Air Force says, we'll put it on a Greyhound and send it to the bus station. Again, because this is VHS, you can't email it. So on Thanksgiving, I'm at the Greyhound bus station till 3 a.m. waiting on a tape. We get the tape, we pop it in the morning, and I'm exhausted, as you can imagine. And we beat Western State by like 30 the next day. And I'm just sitting here just scratching my head going, I spent my Thanksgiving at a Greyhound station and we beat the team by 30, you know, that night. But I, you know, you learn work ethic, you know, and that's what I really enjoyed about it. And, you know, so some things like that have changed as far as technology, but recruiting is recruiting. I think that's the same at all levels. How much work do you want to put in? You know, it's calling people, it's going out to see them, it's writing notes, it's graphics, it's texting them, you know, to me, with recruiting, we get everybody involved. And I like that about Division II. You know, we get to be out when we want to be out. We don't have to be out the whole month of July. I feel like Division I coaches sometimes, they got to be out almost the entire month. We'll pick two events to go to. And then the rest of the time, if I want to go on vacation, I can go on vacation for Division II. But it's allowed me to get into some other stuff. You know, during the pandemic, my assistant coach and I got into a little bit of day trading. You know, we got into some stocks and some cryptos and things like that. So we got to do some things like that that I don't know if you'd get to do as much if you were coaching Division I, you know, but we get a little bit more time. And then the pandemic allowed some of that. So, you know, our school, we couldn't really start much until January because of pandemic. And so we got a couple, you know, hours here and there of preseason stuff. So, you know, we got no games to prepare for. We got nothing, because our first game last year wasn't until January 2nd. So, you know, my assistant and I, July shut down for the pandemic for recruiting. You know, we're just staring at each other because, you know, our guys aren't here for the summer. You know, it's, again, just like your kids, you don't have a ton for the summer. You may have one here or there. But with the pandemic, we had no one here for the summer. So Jordan Franz, my assistant, and I, we somehow get into day trading. You know, so I use my stimulus check that I got from the government for, you know, during that time. And I throw it into an E-Trade account and I start up an E-Trade account and start day trading a little bit. So, you know, so you get to kind of jump into some other different things and you got time for some hobbies like that. Of course, family's a hobby for me. You know, I love spending time with my wife and my son. You know, my son's 2 years old, so he's running around like a maniac right now. But we've got to do some things with him and take him to some different places. He's full of energy in life right now. But, you know, so that's probably taken up my biggest hobby. But, you know, I'd say for me, when I have time to do stuff, it's jumping in the market a little bit and messing around in the market.
That's awesome. Yeah, there's like so many unique things that you get at the small college level that you touched on, and those hobbies and the free time. Obviously, we're still normal people. You know, we get consumed in our jobs, and you talk about some of your stories of your experiences that you've had. You know, I got a few of those. My Thanksgiving, I'll never forget. We were in, now it was on Disney. We were in Orlando and we had a bunch of managers in one room and we were at the Old Spice Classic and we weren't allowed to wash our jerseys. We could wash the jerseys, but they like had like stitching and we weren't allowed to dry them. We were playing like a turnaround in less than 24 hours. And so we had them like hanging from our whole room, fans, things. And I'll never forget, we were like doing laundry and we missed Thanksgiving meal with the team. So us and the managers, we had to go, we ate McDonald's for Thanksgiving dinner. And I, like, you just miss certain things, but like it kind of builds your character a little bit. It kind of builds like, hey, the grind of what we've gone through to get to where we are. I remember deck-to-deck VHS tapes. I've done those trips in the car, trading film, different things, getting yelled at because the game was blacked out on TV. And it's like uncontrollable things that you can't control. And You've seen it all. So college basketball exposes you to a lot of things, and that's pretty
cool. Heaven forbid somebody send you a tape and it was a blank tape.
Oh, yeah.
Those were the worst.
It's still crazy. Like, JUCO guys, they still think like they're hiding something. Like, there's really – I mean, you're supposed to help your kids. Like, all of our games are in synergy, all 10 of our preseason games. Go and scout us. Like, yeah. It's okay. We're still going to have to
– I'll tell you what I think is a little bit interesting, though, is like – When I got in it, and I was a first-year GA, I'm doing film exchange, and I'm not getting to recruit that much because, again, I didn't have a background. You know, I wasn't even a manager or anything. So, but I was doing film exchange, and I built so many relationships because of film exchange. Like Justin Barkley and I, who ended up hiring me later at Roger State, the reason we communicated so much early was because we were trading VHS tapes. He was the GA at Northeastern Oklahoma State. I was the GA at West Texas, and we were swapping so many tapes all the time that we got to know each other a little bit better because of that. And so, you know, you use a tool like that, and it worked to my advantage later because I got to build even more relationships. And in hindsight, you know, that also helped me in recruiting because I built a lot of relationships in recruiting through that stuff.
That's awesome. Yeah, the point of getting to know people in a weird or different way. You see them on recruiting, and you're competing against them or you're playing against them. But when you get to work together with the people that, you know, you quote unquote, you know, are your friends that you get to see twice a year, but having that other factor is definitely awesome. You mentioned in your last talk a little bit about some hobbies and, you know, obviously family and different things. And you talked about, you mentioned something that kind of hits home with me, the cryptocurrency market. So you've dabbled in some of that. Yeah. You did some E-Trade stuff. You took your stimulus. I'm sure the government loved to hear that. Someone didn't need their stimulus and they went to go make money. But, you know, to have money, in order to make money, sometimes you need to have a little money. Yeah. And us in coaching, we don't always get paid the most, or we do have some of that free time or manage our money really well because we're managing budgets and we're doing different things. Tell us a little bit more about how did you learn that and what are you kind of into? You got a few that – you got some stock tips or some crypto tips for the people out here?
I don't know about tips. I'll talk about one in particular here in a second. I don't know how we got into it. You know, Coach Jordan Franz, my assistant, and I, we just kind of decided we were going to jump in. He started getting on some Discords, some different chat rooms and things. And we got on there and just were following trades, really, that other people were doing. Because some of these chat rooms, guys will post what they're trading and when they buy and when they sell. And so we just started watching it and we weren't really following it. We weren't really copying it. We're just kind of watching it, trying to learn. And so it was really just jump in and learn that way because we didn't know much about it. So we started watching some YouTube videos and, you know, just different ways of trying to figure it out. And I think, you know, the coaching part of it comes into that because, you know, it's like dissecting a team when you're getting ready to play someone. You're going to do everything you can to figure out what you can do to try to beat an opponent sometimes. And so for us, it was, we were trying to figure out every single way we could figure out how to make some money in the market, you know? So we were trying to educate ourselves so we didn't just blow our money when we started messing around in it a little bit. So we started reading and following people through these chats that actually knew what they were doing. And they were making quite a bit through the pandemic. And then we started following a few of their plays. And then, you know, we started learning how to find those ourselves, you know, and then also through word of mouth. You know, Raylan Woods is a very close friend of mine. He's an assistant at Harding University. Raylan has a friend in Baton Rouge. And he actually told Raylan and I about a crypto named GameCoin. And, you know, I didn't know anything about it at the time. And Raylan calls me and he's explaining to me what GameCoin is. And so he said, hey, I'll put you in touch with my buddy Coit. And Coit can tell you a little bit more about it as well. And so all three of us get on and we talk about GameCoin. And basically what GameCoin is going to be, it's still up and coming right now, but it's a crypto that's going to help athletics and youth athletics in particular. And it's something that started in Baton Rouge. So it's something that really, once I found out more and did more research about it, something that kind of drove home to me as I invested in it, because I was like, you know, it's something that helps youth that need help as far as purchasing equipment and things like that. And that's the initial info I was getting. And I was like, okay, it helps underprivileged kids have a chance. And to me, that's what athletics is about. I mean, how many kids are you offering a scholarship to, even, you know, in junior college, and you're doing it to help better their lives because you know it's going to get them a degree. It's, you know, it's going to help them down the road. And you think about youth athletics sometimes, and kids can't afford all of the same things. And so they don't all have the same opportunities. And so the more I learned about GameCoin and what it was doing, it allowed the youth that were underprivileged to have more opportunities, whether it was to purchase a baseball bat, whether it's purchase a glove, whether it's purchase travel fees for travel ball in the summer through their cryptocurrency. And the more I learned about it, the more interested I was, the more I was like, you know, I need to tell coaches, I need to tell other people about this. Randomly, I'm scrolling through Twitter. Brian Bender likes a GameCoin tweet. And so I called you and you know, said, hey, are you in GameCoin? And you said, yeah, hey, I dabble in that. Even then you didn't know much about it, you know? And so that was kind of the neat thing for me, is that they provide a platform for youth athletics and for underprivileged youth. And that's what they're starting. And it's in the infancy stages right now of what they're doing. And so I just think the opportunity is huge to get in on something on the ground floor like that. And so, you know, if it wasn't for Raylan Woods, I didn't have any research or anything to do with that. But Raylan and I always joke that the coach and us, if we're going to invest in something, we're going to fully know about what we're investing in. We're not just going to blindly invest in something. And so that's kind of why we jumped into GameCoin, was we thought it really helped. The other neat thing, every transaction, if you buy and sell GameCoin, 5% goes back to charity. Well, you can see all their donations. They've donated $50,000 to a high school athletic program in Baton Rouge that was affected by the hurricane. They offered $100,000 to another high school, and they've given checks to these schools that were affected by the hurricane. They got Jenny Finch involved, who's an Olympian softball, was at Arizona, one of the best pitchers there ever was. And, you know, she's got a youth softball thing in L.A. And so they donated $50,000 to that youth organization in L.A. And so all these transactions, when people like you and me buy this crypto, we're also giving to charity. And so, and they're doing their charity legit to youth organizations and high schools and youth people that they can help. And so to me, the whole thing was really neat. And so it's something I've really got behind. You know, I've kind of shared it to a lot of my friends, and actually had a former player call me today that got a business degree when he was at Oklahoma City University. And he was just calling to catch up. I hadn't talked to him in a while. And he was on our conference tournament championship team my last year at Oklahoma City. And we were just reminiscing about that year. And he got his business degree. He's telling me what he's doing, you know, how he's doing and things like that. And I was telling him, you know, I got into the stocks because he's into business. And he said, oh, what are you in? And, you know, I spent the next 20 minutes telling him about GameCoin. He's like, coach, I want to get in that. So I text him all the info, and he goes, yeah, I'm going to throw a little bit at it. And so I was texting him how to get in it. And that's today. So, you know, for me, that's something that's kind of hit home because it's something that helps youth athletics. I'm all about teaching through athletics. I had a long talk with a young man last night in my office after we got back from a game about how athletics helps teach how to overcome adversity. And I don't know a better way sometimes to teach young people how to overcome adversity. I think that's going to help them be better husbands, be better fathers, be better in life when they deal with adversity. And so what better way than to help youth people with that right now that are underprivileged, and that's a way that I could help. So, that's one of the ones I jumped into. I know that was, again, I'm sorry. I know I'm long-winded. I like to talk, as you can tell, but that's something that I've been really passionate about.
That's great. Yeah. GameCoin. Put your money in there. No financial advice here. We had to have a little disclosure on here. No, it'll help a lot of people. And like you said, as you get into things or you invest in things, especially in athletics or your time, you have to be passionate about what it is. And when you find something like that has a purpose bigger than what it is, it's a win-win. And the tough part about that too is we're coaches and we're competitive. And I joke with my players all the time and tell them, hey, we have to want to win more than we want to be right. And in investing in different things, sometimes that's a double-double, and it's addicting, but at the same time, it can really, give yourself some alternative cash. And
the thing I like about it, we can at least share the wins, So if I find something, I'm calling Raylan Woods, or I'm calling you, or whoever it might be, and you friends trying to help friends make money in this too. And so that's the other awesome part of it to me, is we're not competing against each other in it. We're all trying to help each other get wins in this.
Yeah. Having each other's back. Yeah. It's unique. So my assistant, he's now at Salem University Division II as the top assistant there, but he was my volunteer 2 years ago and on our staff, and he would day trade every morning. And they were like, I knew not to mess with him from like 8:30 to 9 a.m. because it's opening, coach. Like, he's not going to answer a text message or something like that. But no, it allowed him to do what he loved to do. Having an alternative skill set on top of coaching. Plus, you talked about the life lessons that you learned. I was talking to my uncle the other day, and he works in a company. And in his company, they were going through something where they had to work together on a project. And he's like, this dude never played sports. And I was like, what do you mean? He's like, he's never played sports. He didn't know how to, have each other's back, and different communications about that you learn in sports that we take for granted. That's just really important. Handling adversity, like you talked about, nothing's more in a quick turnaround where you got to figure out, how are you going to respond rather than react to the event that's happening, and not focus just on those outcomes and trying to have the best response possible. And we say next best action in our program. What is the next best action you could take? So the next best action for you listening right now, buy some GameCoin. After that, no, you just having people's back, being present and different things like that. I just think are so important. I'm going to ask, I got a couple more questions for you. Obviously your last name is Patel, an Indian last name. You don't see a lot of people with the last name Patel in our coaching industry, let alone basketball. Talk a little bit about that, talk about maybe some of your family background and things like that. And, you joked earlier, why weren't you a doctor or in business or something like that? And, you talk about why you're in coaching, but talk a little bit about the last name, your heritage and your background.
Well, it's something I'm really proud about. My parents, when I got into coaching, they weren't necessarily happy with me about it. They wanted me to go into med school, or they wanted me to go into business or something. And my dad initially, he was not happy about it. And, the more I've done this, the more they understand it and the more supportive they became, when they started seeing, just how athletics helps these guys get a degree and better their lives, screw the basketball part. Let's just talk about the degree itself. When my dad started seeing that stuff, I think he started getting into it a little bit more. And, my parents barely know anything about basketball. They come to games now and my dad will say, you got to work on your throws better, your 3-point throws, and I just kind of laugh, and they're trying, they still to this day, they try to learn. They want to know more and more about it. My dad, mom, like I talked to them today and, they were fired up because we won last night and they want to learn more and more about it. They just don't know how to ask some of the questions. So that's a little bit unique sometimes because it's hard for me to sometimes explain to them what I'm doing day to day, you know, and why I'm so busy day to day at times. But, you know, it's been awesome because for me, there's not a lot of people that have done it of Indian descent. You know, when I got named interim head coach when I was 29, I was the first Indian head coach in NCAA history. When I got named head coach at Oklahoma City, I was the first NAI head coach in of Indian descent as well. And, you know, that's not something you won't see that on my resume. You won't see me tweet about that stuff. That's not a big deal to me. What I like is that maybe other people can see it and it won't stop them from trying to do it. And you know, and it's been, you and I were talking before this. I mean, I get letters and notes and emails from Indian coaches, Indian GAs, a video guy from here or there, wherever, you know, and it's because I've been blessed to get a chance to be a head coach and they want to do that at some stage. So, you know, for me, that's an exciting part of it is that, you know, maybe they'll look at me and go, hey, I can do that. That's not why I did this, though. You know, for me, I just want to be like everyone else with this. You know, I want to help kids. I want to help kids get their degrees. I want to help kids better themselves. You know, I want to win basketball games. The competitive side of me wants to win basketball games. But it's not why I do this, though. But, you know, for me, though, just getting that platform to some level and you know, I'm not a big, you know, you follow me on Twitter. I'm not a big tweeter and stuff like that. So I'm not constantly doing that stuff. I'm not in a bunch of organizations and things like that to me. But I'm glad that people can look at me, you know, that are Indian and they can say, hey, I want to do that. If he did it, then I know I can do it. And so if that helps somebody, then great. You know, you know, it's something that, you know, for me, my family, like it's when we all get together, they got so many questions, you know, like my cousins and stuff. They all want to ask about recruiting and how recruiting works. And, you know, how do you get players? And, you know, how's Chris Beard getting players? You know, and because I got a cousin that graduated from Texas. So he's asking about Chris Beard. And, you know, and I got people asking about Coach Adams at Texas Tech. What's he doing to get players? And, you know, so that's always fun is because, you know, a lot of people in my family don't understand athletics, don't understand how it works. So, you know, it's fun kind of getting to educate them at times, things like that. But, you know, I like it because I do see that people get something of the fact that I am a head coach being Indian and that maybe it opens some doors for other people because it won't stop them from trying it, you know, because I know a lot of parents that are traditional Indian parents, they don't want their kids to do it. They don't want their kids to go away from the norm. And I kind of joke to my family all the time, say I'm the black sheep of the family because I'm the one that is in coaching. And you can stereotype a lot of my family. Trust me, we got a lot of hotel owners, we got doctors, we got you name it, you know, we got a lot, you can stereotype a lot of us, you know, and I'm the black sheep of the bunch. And so, you know, that's always my hope is maybe someone else will see it. Hey, it's okay if you go into something different. And so, you know, that's probably the biggest thing for me about it is maybe they can see that. And if I can help them, then I will in that. But there's just not a ton of Indian people that are in basketball coaching. I can tell you that.
Sure. Yeah. Just chasing your dream and your passion, regardless of what it is, regardless of money, regardless of, you know, what you look like, it doesn't matter. You just do what you love, find what you love. And you're going to be more passionate about it, be happier every day. And you control that own happiness. And you can obviously tell from your personality and listen to you, like you have deep passion for what you do and why you do it. And understanding that is extremely important for everybody and your players and who you're around, your family, all that good stuff. I'm going to ask you, you have mentioned recruiting quite a bit. And you signed one of my players last year, and I know you got like what 6 D1 transfers on your team right now. What, without giving away your deepest, darkest secrets here, so you don't get sabotaged in recruiting or anything like that. But you know, tell us what are one or two things that you feel like you do that are unique besides working hard. Like you're obviously a really hard blue collar worker. You know, what is it in recruiting that you found success doing that others should look into, or you know, you would tell someone that's a new recruiter?
You know, my first thing is build relationships. You know, I would say that's been a strong point over the course of my career has been recruiting. To me, it starts with relationships. I don't care if it's the coach. I don't care if it's the player. I don't care if it's the parent. I think it first starts with building a relationship with people. And how are you going to do that? You know, there's no secret to me, first of all, in this deal. It's not a secret. If anyone called me and asked what I did, I would tell them. I've gotten a lot of questions of, how do you get these kids to Alva, Oklahoma? And I would say, well, why won't they come to Alva, Oklahoma? To me, it starts with our program. It starts with their relationship. I always say they're signing to play for me first, and if they know I'm going to take care of them, if they know I'm going to push them, if they know I'm in for their best interest, that I want to see them succeed, and they truly believe that I want to see them succeed, then they're going to take a chance on me as a coach first. I do think it starts with us as coaches first. And so what kind of relationship are you going to build with a kid? I would tell new generation people, stop texting kids all the time. Pick up the phone and call a kid. And I think young coaches text all the time and they don't call enough. And I think one of the, I don't call it a secret. I think it's something a lot of coaches do, is just pick up the phone and call a kid. When I recruit a kid, I'm recruiting the kid, I'm recruiting the coach, I'm recruiting their mom and dad, their family, whoever the trigger person is, an AAU coach, a prep coach, we're recruiting them all. And so it's not just the kid to me. It's everybody that's around them. When we recruited your kid last year, how much did you and I speak over the course of that recruitment? Because I'm letting you know how I'm going to take care of your player too. So when you sit down and talk to that player, you also know the things I'm going to do to help see him succeed. Because I want him to hear it from every different direction, not just from me specifically. I'm still old school a little bit. We write notes still. I want stuff coming in the hard mail. Especially during the pandemic, all the kids were at home. So if you send something in the mail and mail comes in, they're at their family's house, everyone in the family's going to go, hey, what did you get? Who's that from? And we were like, okay, let's send stuff in the mail. So then they start talking about Northwestern, and their family starts talking about Northwestern. And everything we said was, how can we keep our name in front of kids? We text and we send graphics and all that stuff as well. But to me, it just all started about relationships first. And we really work at getting to know our kids, getting to know about them. I want to know, who their favorite musician is, their favorite rapper, whatever it might be. We want to know who that is. We want even the smallest detail of what's their favorite color. I want to know what their favorite color is sometimes. And I'll ask them random things like that. I'll also throw the work into it besides relationship. We flew in, I don't know how many kids to sign the class, and we signed a huge class this year. And the airport is 1 hour and 45 minutes to Wichita, Kansas from Alva, and it is 2.5 hours from Oklahoma City. I was in the car and we drove to Wichita, and I run into the Wichita State assistant there, and I've known him forever. And he goes, what are you doing here? Because he was at the airport too. He was actually flying out somewhere. And I said, well, I'm picking up a recruit. And he goes, well, why are you picking him up? Why is the GA or assistant not picking him up? And I said, well, I'm trying to sign him. I'm the head coach. And so every kid we flew in, I'm there for every kid. I'm dropping them off at the airport and I'm taking them. My assistant and I both are going on every trip, because I just said, hey, that's 2 more hours. That's 2.5 more hours one way that I get to spend with that kid. In turn, it ends up being 5 more hours going there and back with the kid that I'm getting to spend, that I'm getting to know. And he's getting to know me just as much as I'm getting to know him, because at the end of the day, I also want to know, does this kid fit in our program? And so we're trying to get to know these guys as much as possible, but we want them to know we're going to take care of them. And so, I know I've harped on that relationship part a lot, but that's the biggest secret to our recruiting, is just the relationship we had. People look at Alva and like everyone asks, what's the hardest part of recruiting to Northwestern? No doubt, Alva, Oklahoma is the hardest part. That has not stopped us from getting guys, though. Have we gotten beat on guys? Yeah, but I think everyone's gotten beat at whatever level on guys, but we've gotten to get a lot of kids because, I think the relationship part of it for us, they believe in what we want in our program. They believe we're going to help them get a degree. They believe we're going to help them grow. And we tell them we're going to help them grow socially. We tell them we're going to help them grow athletically. We tell them we're going to help them grow academically. And then even now this year, now that we're out of COVID, we're even saying we're going to help you grow spiritually. Once a week we bring in the preacher from First Baptist Church here in Alva into work with our team once a week, because I know guys need that part of it as well in their lives. And so we're trying to spiritually help them grow. And we're telling them all this, and everyone's saying these things, but how can you get them to believe? How can you, they know that you're genuine about it. And that's kind of the hard part. And then the other part is, you know, the basketball part of it. We want them to know, hey, how are you going to fit into our program basketball wise? And so we use a lot of video for that, you know, and then when we visit, do visits, you know, we'll cut up clips of them at your school and someone at the same position at our school. And here's how that person's found success playing here. Here's the shots you get to take. And we try to get them to see themselves in our program basketball wise as well. You know, so like I've had coaches even here ask, you know, what we're saying to kids to get them here. And we're not saying anything that you're not saying, you know, but we're doing everything we can to get them to see that they belong here, you know, and that they're going to love it here once they get here. And the whole trick is showing, how are you going to be able to show them you can do that? And, you know, I always equate it to post defense for basketball coaches. I always say, you got to do your work early, you know, in post defense. We always say, you got to do your work early. I think in recruiting, you got to do your work early. You got to identify kids and you got to attack them, you know, and that's with mail. That's with text. That's with phone calls, recruiting everyone around them, figuring out who their trigger person is, getting mom or dad on board, you know, answering all their questions. And, you know, I've heard of kids and coaches that they've only talked to the kid and they haven't talked to the coach that he played for before, or they haven't talked to the previous coach that he played for if he's leaving a Division I, and say he played at a junior college. They hadn't even called the junior college coach or the Division I coach. And you know, we're going to do all our homework to make sure we get the right one, because I don't like kids coming here and then leaving our program either. And so we're trying to do as much work up front as possible. And that's why I say do your work early, because I think if you're doing that, then you're also getting to know them. You're also building that relationship. Then that gives you an even better chance to get the kid. So, you know, that's my post. I know we haven't talked a lot of hoops, but, you know, post defense, do your work early.
Do your work early in the post, and low man wins. That's it.
Keep
your feet moving. Got dance in the post.
Yeah.
So do it all.
I told you even, man, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but, you know, back when I was a GA, I just told you how long I sat in front of a fax machine just writing good luck today. And that'd be if you were playing a JUCO game on a Thursday, I'm sending that many on Thursday, and then I'm flipping around sending that many again on Saturday for those games, you know. And we did that a ton at WT. And I got to think, you know, he's not in coaching anymore, but Justin Ashley was the assistant at West Texas when I was the grad assistant. And a lot of what I learned early was from him. He wrote a ton of notes. He was the one that had me in front of the fax machines. We had just a laundry list of names on the board, you know, and we were doing everything we can to stay in touch with these kids, to let these kids know who we were, to let these kids know about West Texas, you know, and that kind of started the process for me. You know, as I got a little bit older and I was a second year GA, and they got to know me a little bit better. They kind of said, hey, you know, and I think it's partly because I was so young. I was 22 at the time. They said, hey, he can relate to these kids. Let's let him call some of them. So then I got to start at a young age. And so something we do in recruiting, you know, with our GAs, and I think it's our job, you know, for all coaches, and I don't care what level, it's our job to help young people learn how to do this job and advance in the profession. And so I'm big on teaching our younger coaches, that's in recruiting, that's on the floor, whatever it might be. And so, you know, we'll take our GAs, we will give them recruits to call, and we'll have a folder at times and a binder, and we'll have questions that they need to have answered by the second or third call. And we'll give them like 10 questions. And some of them may be, who's your favorite NBA player? And we'll say, you know, you don't have to get all these answered in the first call, but by the time you hand this binder to me and I'm going to call whoever it might be, all these questions better be answered. So then when I flip around and call that kid, I already know all these things. But that's helping teach that grad assistant as well. You know, I think a lot of coaches in recruiting, they do all the talking. And I know I'm doing a lot of the talking in this podcast. But in recruiting, we try to ask questions and get the kid to do a lot of the talking. And so, you know, I think then you can correspond a little bit better. And so that's what we try to teach our GAs and things like that is, and we try to get everyone to recruit a kid. You know, it's not just me. Our GAs are going to call them. Our assistants are going to call them. I'm going to call them. And our staff recruits kids. And I think that's the last thing I'd say about recruiting with the way we do it is every kid for us is important. And we're going to target a kid. We're going to know we're going after that kid. Then we're all going to recruit him. You know, it's not just going to be me that's calling him. It's not going to just be my associate head coach that's calling him. It's going to be all of us that calls him. We all call. We all text. that same thing with those parents. That's the same thing with the coaches. You know, we got a kid this year in this class because of a relationship we had with a prep coach. He was at the prep school along. I mean, he went junior college for a couple of years after the prep, and then he was at another division too. We got him because of the prep coach, and both of us were calling the prep coach. And so when the kid's sitting in front of us, the prep coach called him and said, you better sign those papers, you know, because he trusted that we were going to take care of that kid. But we went that far back that we were contacting that prep coach. Well, it just happened that that prep coach was the biggest influence in that kid's life. And, you know, we played opening weekend, and that prep coach was at opening weekend game, you know, and he was at there to see him play. And so I don't know if people always understand that there's very influential people in a recruit's lives other than just their parents. And so we try to do a good job of identifying those people as well and then recruiting them as well. You know, I was telling a coach the other day, if I sent a player a graphic through text, then I'm going to send it to him, his mom or dad, his coach, as you know, because we sent you stuff as well. But we're going to recruit everybody in this because we want you to know about our program. We want you to know how we're going to take care of your athlete.
Yeah. You said some things that were really impactful. And I don't even know if you realize that you're saying them sometimes, but, you know, great leaders ask better questions. They ask impactful questions. They're very good listeners. And, you know, me just listening to you, like, obviously is impacting in different ways. But, you know, FaceTiming a kid, I think that goes a long ways in this generation. Yeah, we text all the time, but FaceTiming, putting in the work, going to see them no matter how far away they are. You know, that happens at my school too. Like, we're Southwest, and I'm recruiting kids in the Northeast and the East side of the state. And they're like, well, we know, why'd you go all the way there? Like, we don't ever get kids from there. Well, he's the 15th best player in the state, and I think he's the best prospect. We signed him. He goes to Southern Miss. Well, he passed 14 other JUCOs to come to ours. Well, it was because of the relationship that I built with his mom, his dad, his cousin at another school, his barber. Like, you just go, you just find the guys, and you go and see him and his high school coach, and, you know, it works out. So, you know, I think that leadership part and that recruiting is really important. And the other part that you said something about, you know, what's most important to a kid? Well, it's his future. You know, what's most important to a parent? Well, it's their kid. You know, and if you can take care of those two things and make them feel comfortable and cared for, you know, love matters. And investing that time and energy is, you know, time is love. You know, if you can spend time with people, it's going to pay off.
I think the other thing I was going to add this too is, you know, in recruiting is you got to go after kids. You can't just assume you're not going to get someone. You know, I've heard a lot of people say, you know, I didn't go after him because I didn't think I could get him. And, you know, when I was and maybe it was just because I was dumb and I was 21 or 22. I mean, I was going after kids then that I had no business even trying to recruit. You know, we were sending letters and calling kids that were going high major Division I when I was at West Texas, just because I didn't know any different, you know. So I'd go watch South Plains play and I would see a stud 6'11 kid and I would still write that kid a note. And I was just never afraid to go after guys. And I think you can't get your feelings hurt in recruiting. You're going to get told no. And to me, it's always, okay, on to the next guy then. And so I don't think you can be afraid to go after somebody because all of a sudden you assume something. And I think that happens a lot in recruiting. And I think it happens a lot. And I don't care what sport it is when you're talking recruiting, is you can't assume you're going to get someone. You know, I've heard even just being here at Northwestern, I've heard, well, we can't get them because we're in Alba. And my question's always been why. You know, I'm not going to assume I can't get someone because they don't want to come to Oklahoma. You know, like, I've been in AI. We've gotten good players in AI. We were in Canyon, Texas. You know, Canyon's in the middle of nowhere. You know, we had the benefit of having Amarillo close to there. But that never stopped us from getting players. So, you know, location matters, but it's not the be-all and end-all. And so, you know, to me, it still comes back to, does that kid know you're going to take care of him? You know, does that kid believe if he comes there, he's going to achieve his goals as a player, as a person, as a student? Is he going to achieve everything that he wants to achieve? Location has nothing to do with that. You know, if they can get past the location, then you're going to get the kid because then they trust you with everything else. You know, now some kids won't, because some kids are caught up in, hey, I want to go to the mall, or I want to do this and that. And that's great too. But, you know, I'll also ask them, well, what's your priorities? You know, Name them in order to me. What's your priorities? And, you know, if they start saying school, then basketball, then whatever, and location's not in the top of that, you know, we'll also address that and say, okay, well, you didn't put location in your priorities. And we'll address that and we'll talk about that. I'm very upfront with recruits. I think sometimes I'm honest to a fault, because in my first call to kids, I tell them about our location. I tell them how small our community is. And I'm just upfront with them. And I just say, if a small atmosphere as far as a town is not what you want, then let's just not go down this road right now. But if you're okay with that, because this is going to be a great atmosphere, you're going to be in a community that embraces you, that embraces athletics, you know, and we address it up front. And I just think the fact that if you're honest with them, and I also think in that first call, if they can go, you know what, I think I can trust this guy, because he is saying this about his school right now, and he's letting me know a true fact right now that some people would take as negative. But, you know, I don't. I was born and raised in a town of 2,000 people. And so I'm okay with a small town, you know. And again, I told you that's why I came here, is I could spend time with my son. And so I really love it here. And so to me, it's an easy sell because I love it here. So I'm passionate about this place. And I think if a kid can feel my passion about being here, then we could maybe get past that location then. And so the just assumption part that you can't get someone because of whatever it may be, a facility, you know, your location. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I've heard so many things in recruiting. Then you're not going to be successful. You know, I just think you should take a cocky approach in recruiting as far as go after kids and don't be afraid to get told no. You know, you can't be afraid to get told no and then be hurt over no. You know, we say in our office when a kid tells us no, okay, next man up. Who's up next? You know, who's on the board next? Who are we going after next? And then we just move and put all effort into the next kid at that stage, you know, or if it may be at that stage, all right, do we need to call Brian Bender? Do we need to call whoever and start stirring up more names and digging up more kids? Because maybe the next kid is not what we need. You know, and then the last thing I'll say is don't settle, you know, don't settle for kids you don't want, because there's enough kids out there right now that you can get what you want in recruiting. I do believe that you don't have to settle for a kid that you don't want. If you keep flipping rocks, if you keep working your tail off, if you keep calling people and going on the road and going to schools and going to see kids, then it's going to work out in your favor. And I'm just a believer in that. And that goes back to the work ethic that you said, you know, like going across the state of Mississippi to the east side to go. Yeah, we do the same thing here. I mean, we got two kids from Coffeyville in this class. Coffeyville won the national championship last year. And the reason that we got them is Jordan Franz and I jumped into a car and drove to a game at Coffeyville. I texted Coach Herkelman after the game, and Coach Herkelman said, hey, you need to recruit Larry White and Jalen Smith. And just because I went to that game, they told us who to recruit. Those weren't the guys they were telling us to recruit before that. But because we put in the effort to go to the game, then Coach Herkelman told us about Larry White and Jalen Smith. And so we targeted those guys. And they win the national championship. And I mean, days later, they signed with our program after winning the national championship. And I had people asking, how did y'all get them? Well, we put the work in. We drove to Coffeyville and then recruited those kids. You know, there was no secret to what we did. You know, we put the work in and we ended up getting the kids because of it. So, you know, I'd say exactly what you said. Don't be afraid to work. You know, don't be afraid. And then guess what? You're going to jump in the car. You're going to drive across the state of Mississippi. And you're going to recruit your tail off, work your tail off, and then that kid's going to tell you no. That's just part of it, you know. And I learned that a long time ago, and so I've learned to not let that bother me. I've just learned to go to the next kid, and let's find the next guy after that. So that'd be my little bit of advice on the tail end of what you said.
I'm still stubborn with that sometimes because it happened this week even. We had a kid that we went to see. We probably said it, spent $1,000 going to go see these two kids, and we didn't get them. But, you know, I know that I put my best foot forward going there to see them, building the relationship, talking to the right people. And again, you know, distance sometimes comes into play.
Yeah.
You know, you said a couple of things I just want to touch on. Don't blame, complain, or make excuses.
Yep.
Just compete. And you're either a complainer or a competitor or a guy that competes. And you know, you being a competitor, you know, it's helped you in so many facets of your life. And
my old coach I worked for, he's now the chief of staff at Texas Tech, Rick Cooper. But he used to always say, you're either part of the problem or you're part of the solution. And so, you know, I've always learned to be a solution guy. You know, so the other piece of advice he always said, you know, I'm going to say this for the young coaches, is don't say, I don't know. You know, he'd ask me a question, and if you said, I don't know, that was not the right answer. You better go find out. So that'd be my bit of advice to young GAs is, you know, the correct answer is, let me find out. Yep. Let me find out, but don't say, I don't know.
Give me 30 seconds. Let me go figure it out. I love it, man. I love it. I really enjoyed speaking with you tonight, and I appreciate your time. And I'm sure our listeners did as well. Give us one. You got 60 seconds. Give us something, you know, just like you just did with, you know, what you just talked about. So give us something to take home, you know, something we could do in the next 24 hours, take home point, something, just hit it home with us as we send you off.
The thing I would say is just work at, you know, your trade, your passion. You know, we tell our kids that all the time, get in the gym and shoot. I think we got to work on our own craft as coaches constantly and not be afraid to get better. You know, I'm not the best coach. I don't try to be the best coach. I'd rather just have good players. You know, there's two types of coaches to me, and people always say, hey, you know, that coach may not be a good coach, but he has really good players. And then you may say, hey, that coach has really good players, but he's not a good coach. I'd rather have really good players, you know? So to me, it's going to be about the players, you know? And to me, that's how I try to live is do everything for my players. You know, whatever we can do for our players to make them better people, to make them better students, to make them better athletes, continue to work on your craft, continue to be better coaches, continue to figure out how to help young people and impact their lives. Because at the end of the day, I hope that's why we're all doing this. Is to help these young people, because I really believe the job that we do as coaches, regardless of sport, you know, we're making a huge impact on this country because we're making an impact on these kids, you know, and they're going off in the world, getting these degrees and becoming better people because of us. And sometimes you don't realize the impact you have on a life. And I think we're in a profession where we get to have a huge impact daily on people.
Yeah, they say that a coach impacts more people in a year than most people do in a lifetime. So, you know, that's great advice. Appreciate you coming on, and thanks for sharing all your wisdom.
Thank you.